Chapter 8. Nicky. Of a final adventure which befalls our hapless hero, and other weighty matters indispensable for the clear understanding of this history. Strangely, with Tommy gone, the band entered for the first time in my memory a period of stability, and we recorded the album that should have been the successor to Dr. Feelgood, New Tattoo. The high and dark emotions of the Generation Swine era were starting to resolve themselves. I had dealt with my father in my own way, won joint custody of my children from Brandy, put the band back on track, and reissued our old albums on Motley Records, where they sold more than 5 times as many copies as Elektra had been selling. But then I received a phone call from my brother Randy. He had found out where our sister Lisa was living, in a sanitarium in Santa Cruz. I was determined to see her. After all the heroin, cocaine, and alcohol, I was finally waking up to who I really was. I called my mom and asked her why she had always kept me away from Lisa, but all she could do was repeat over and over, "It was different back then." I hung up on her and called the clinic. "I don't care what anyone says," I threatened. "I'm going to come down there and see my sister." "What do you mean?" a friendly nurse asked. "Who told you that you couldn't see Lisa? You can come see her whenever you wish." "But my mother told me Lisa didn't want to see family." "You could have seen her any time you wanted. You were always welcome. We were wondering why you never called." "Can you do me a favor? I want to know more about her." They told me that her birthday was November 12th, that she had Down syndrome, was blind and mute, and was confined to a wheelchair. She had an extremely weak heart and weighed less than 60 pounds. "However, she has her full hearing," they said. "And it's strange what you chose to do with your life, because she loves music. All she does every day is sit by the radio." I felt like I was going to have a nervous breakdown. I couldn't believe that I had such an amazing sister who I could have seen any time in the past 40 years. I was leaving for the next leg of the New Tattoo tour in a few days, so I told the nurse I'd visit Lisa when I returned. 3 days after I came home from the tour, Jeff Varner from my management office called and said, "The police are here. They want your address." "Well, give them a message from me," I began the usual reply. "Tell them to fuck off. If they come to my house, they're wasting their time. I won't be there." "Look, they really need to see you," Varner said. "Well, I don't give a fuck. I'm sick of getting arrested and going to jail. Besides, I haven't done anything." Actually, there were a lot of things I had done. 2 days before, my car had been confiscated, and I was thrown in jail for driving without a license. And before that, a security guard I had brawled with in Greensboro on the swine tour had pressed charges. So maybe the cops were trying to extradite me to South Carolina. "Nicky," Varner pleaded, "trust me, you have to tell them where you live and let them come over." "No, I'm not going back to jail. You know what? Get rid of them and book me a flight to somewhere nice in South America. I need a vacation anyway." "Okay, Nicky," he sighed. "Let me call you right back." My phone didn't ring again for an hour. When it did, Vince was on the other line. He sounded fucked up, but not drunk. He was crying. "Nicky, man, I don't know how to tell you this," he began. "What? What?" "They just found your sister dead." "Who? Which sister?" I wasn't sure if it was Lisa or my half-sister, Cece. "I don't know, but that's why the police are at the office. They're trying to tell you." I called the office and found out that Lisa had died of a heart attack that morning. I fell into an instant depression. I was angry at myself for postponing my visit, and I was pissed at my relatives for keeping her a secret all my life. I thought about how we had flown to San Jose on our private plane during the girls' tour for 4 sold-out nights at the local arena, shooting up coke before going on stage, then performing in front of tens of thousands of screaming fans and popping flashbulbs and horny girls and admiring guys. And the whole time my sister with Down syndrome was a mile away in diapers, lying on her back and listening to the radio alone. I could have tried to find her back then. I could have sent her birthday cards. I could have given her money and better care so that maybe she'd still be alive. I could have easily used the $500,000 we made at those shows to start a Down syndrome fund in her name. Always ready to do too little too late, I went to Santa Cruz, bought the most beautiful little casket I could find, and arranged her funeral. It was there that I saw my sister for the first and last time. Though her hands and spine were deformed, her eyes looked exactly like mine. I was with my mother, Cece, and Donna, and I sat with them and cried the whole time. "I'm sorry," I must have told Lisa 100 times that night. "I will see you in heaven." Afterward, she was cremated. For Lisa's sake, I forgave my mother, took the urn back to Los Angeles, and built an angel statue with wings. I wanted to give Lisa the present of freedom and mobility, because she had never been able to walk. I bought a small plot of land at the top of a mountain and buried the urn underneath the statue there, so that wherever I am in Los Angeles, I can see her and be near her and be reminded that I'm not alone in this world and that any day I may leave it to join her. It was my first step towards straightening out all the crooked roads of my past. I never realized before that I had the power to break the chain of secrecy and dishonesty and irresponsibility that I had inherited. And I could do that simply by having a solid relationship with my wife and family, so that my children wouldn't spend their lives lost and hiding from everything like I had. Of course, those resolutions are easier spoken than applied. Thanks in part to our fucked up backgrounds, Donna and I haven't had the most easy marriage. But I've learned that human relationships, like band relationships, take work and compromise. And I'm putting everything I have into this one. We even started seeing a family counselor, which is great, because for the first time there was someone in my life who sits there, listens to me, and isn't afraid to call me out when I'm full of shit or lying to myself, which I've always been very good at. I've spent so long being a rock and roll cliche that I don't want to be a father cliche as well. Recently, Donna found out that she was pregnant with a girl, our first child together. My father's name was Frank, and Frank was the name that was forced upon me when I was born. But in refusing to keep that name as a teenager, I overthrew my family and my past. Now that I'm 41, I want it back again. So Donna and I have chosen a name for the girl, Frankie Jean. The Jean comes from Donna's mother's name, Jeanette. The way I look at it, we've taken our families, glued them together, and finally closed the circle on my father. As I write this, my knees are on the floor, and I'm praying that I can keep the circle together, unbroken, forever.